Diamond platinum.
Yeah.
And Morgan everything.
Go to me conscious.
For all ladies. Yeah.
Ah. Atakila na nyota. Najitambara mwezi kisa na nyota. Ani mkande amechoka. Nitembe na ulimi kote kanyoka. Mapenzi niongeze.
You know the matter whether you be short or tall.
Obi don't want, don't need me.
me kwana min do batu. Dama min chow some love. Jama do ama BBC. What you mean they drive me crazy? Jam your don't see on them testy. Jow da me mami no be yeah. Since you me drive. I send me a love with the conquer. So the other bottom one. No back up, baby, I love this one thing. Say, see, I'm here, driver. Mommy, tea, I see, and I send you, I'm feeling it, yeah, you know, ma. This is what I'm not me, yeah, oh.
Obi, don't want to be,
don't be.
Love is all we need. Obi, pay what,
penny, penny, be.
One love is all we need. Obi, pay what, penny, be.
Because of your bumper, bumper. And I know you don't love me, no, because I'm a timber, timber.
There is not enough for love we conquer, baby. Yeah.
So, baby, make we stay together.
Make we stay together. Oh, we
don't want
to leave. Love is all we need. Oh, be pair, what, penny,
penny, be.
One love is all we need. Oh, be pair, what, penny, be.
You're locked into the Arts and Culture Show. I'm Karina H. Maynard, and I'm so excited to present today's guests, Anne-Marie Imafadon, MBE, no less. Anne-Marie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute honour. I've seen and heard so much about you over the years, and it's really fantastic for you to be on the show. And I just want to really get into a bit about you and just your mission and everything you're doing in terms of women and representation in STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths. Really important work. So first of all, your co-founder and CEO of STEMETS. Tell us a bit about STEMETS, why you formed the organisation and what it does.
So STEMETS is a social enterprise. It's all about inspiring, encouraging and supporting girls and young women into these STEM fields. So science, technology, engineering, maths, as you said. And everything we do is free. It's always fun and there's always food because free food tastes great.
Very important.
But the forming of it actually came out of me and myself being a technologist, really loving working in the industry and not actually realising, not, you know, being perceptive enough to realise that there weren't as many, you know, other women around me working in the industry, but also kind of looking back and realising that at university or lower down kind of in the education system, when I was pursuing maths and technology quite a lot, you know, realising that actually a lot of girls don't have this space and don't have the opportunity to explore that in a way where they might be able to then see themselves as technologists or as mathematicians or as scientists or as engineers. And so, you know, I had a bit of a Damascus moment at a conference in the States, kind of realised I was a woman in tech, which I didn't realise. And this is maybe 4 or 5 years into my career. But also heard about the problem they have over there and saw that we've got a similar thing mirrored here, but for different reasons. And so looked into what was happening, you know, as a young woman interested in all these subjects, what kind of support did I have? What initiatives were there? What spaces? And importantly, safe spaces were there for me to have explored it if I needed. Mm-hmm. And so set up STEMETS as a response to kind of complement what's already there, but to open up this fact that, you know, technology is so creative, it's so fun, it's so altruistic, and in 2017 and soon to be 2018, technology is everywhere.
It is, it is. And there's so much opportunity there. I've heard you speak about the fact that STEM-related careers are so well paid in relation to other careers. And, I mean, I just find it really interesting because, obviously, especially here in the UK, young women, young girls perform so well in sort of up to GCSE in areas such as maths. And I'm just wondering, why do you think that so few of them sort of take these STEM-related subjects any further?
So you're right, they do really well, actually. Mm. So it's not a question of aptitude, it's a question of you know, having the right attitude towards it. And so what we see is, you know, there are many reasonings. The biggest one that we talk about is the social norm. So this fact that it's not normal, it's not a thing in society that we see often enough. And so that means that girls and young women are effectively conditioned at every stage that this isn't something for you, or this isn't something that you do, or you don't want to get your hands dirty, or, you know, they have all kinds of things from their peers, from their teachers, sometimes even from parents. And if not any of that, it's from TV and from media. We don't tell enough stories of these women who've done incredible things that we use every day, from Tippex to bulletproof vests to Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. You know, the women behind those technologies, and so it is something where, you know, they call it the leaky pipeline, but at every stage where you progress, you know, in the field, you have fewer and fewer women participating.
It's interesting because obviously we've got like shows like The Big Bang Theory, and you know it's funny enough, but it's not exactly what you'd call representative. I mean,
it's not selling it, is
it's
it?
It's not. No, you can be.
You don't want Sheldon as a friend. You don't want to be Amy Farrah Fowler. We had the IT crowd before Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And it continues, all these awful portrayals, and they're kind of lone portrayals. I think, like you said, Big Bang Theory, I guess, to some is still quite funny. Although, you know, you can have a look on YouTube of Big Bang Theory without the laughter track, and all of a sudden it's not as funny. But, you know, we have these kind of lone portrayals. So where in something like medicine, you have doctors, you have ER, you have scrubs, you have, you know, Grey's Anatomy and all these other shows, for technology and for science, you have so few portrayals that it is just the Sheldons, it is just the Einsteins, it is just those Moss from IT Crowd, those kind of characters that you have coming through, which means that if you're someone who's never met a scientist or didn't realize that you were sat next to an engineer on the bus this morning, that is the perception that you have.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, in Big Bang Theory, for example, you know, you could be a girlfriend, and two of the girlfriends are scientists, but the hot, in inverted commas, girl is not. And, you know, in terms of making STEM sexy, probably for want of a better word, a more age appropriate world, attractive,
more chic,
less geek. How important do you think it is for there to be not just women in STEM careers, but a diversity of women, different types of women, you know, women who paint their nails and wear pink in STEM roles? I mean,
so it's incredibly important for us to have lots of different types of women, lots of different types of people in STEM. Important for, you know, a large number of reasons. I think that all of them can be summed up in the fact that STEM is an enabler, and it's problem solving. And unfortunately, you know, today's world, we have a lot of problems. There are a lot of problems. I'm not saying all of them can be solved by STEM, but many of them can, if not be solved, can be made better. The situation can be made better if we use STEM and our knowledge of STEM. So, you know, if we look at Tippex was almost invented as a response to typewriters, which is the old technology where you couldn't hit the delete button, right? Or if we look at, you know, I talk about voice recognition quite a lot, actually. We've now got Google Home and Siri and Alexa and all these things that we're selling at Christmas. But the technology for these products has been around for decades, right? But those initial teams that worked on them only had a certain set of voices, which meant that the product couldn't fly, couldn't be used by more people. And so that technology, you know, ultimately was left fallow for decades before we then realized, maybe we should have slightly higher pitched voices. Maybe we should have voices with an accent that we train this data on so that it can be something that everyone can use and everyone can take advantage of. So it's really important to have diversity of people because they feed into those products, they feed into the different perspectives that are needed, and they, you know, then make things that help people. And, you know, economically speaking, also they make money and all that kind of stuff. But for me, it is about helping people, solving those problems, turning a litre of urine into 6 hours of electricity.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, every aspect of our daily lives is influenced by some STEM related area, whether it's our technology that we use, but even to, you know, in terms of in the medical field, in the creative fields, I mean, there's not an area of life that isn't touched.
Everything is engineered. Your trainers are engineered, you know, it's literally everything.
Absolutely. And I've heard you a lot of your talks that you've done at industry conferences around the world, often on sort of STEM-related topics and education conferences, and you do speak quite a lot about female pioneers. How important do you think it is that we are educated and our history encompasses these the women that have led the way in STEM-related fields?
It's incredibly important because, and you'll have seen this as some of my talks, you know, when we think about STEM or the history of science, it is, you know, dead white guys that come to mind. And it's because those are the only ones that we really talk about. And it's a shame because, it, you know, you don't have to be dead or white or male to have had some sort of contribution. And that perception only comes from the fact that that's all we talk about, right? So CCTV was co-invented by a black woman. Who knew that? Who knows that? We don't know. But we use the technology. And it's, it, you know, it's awful because sometimes those women have actively been written out of the history books because they were women. So, you know, there's Sarah Guppy is one example of an engineer who was a mother of six from Bristol, was involved in the big bridge they have out there, and it's all under Brunel's name because she thought, you know, it was kind of, it's not good or becoming of a woman to kind of have her name kind of credited in the work that she does. Right to Marie-Sophie Germain, who was a French mathematician who was prolific around the time that the Eiffel Tower went up. And anyone that's ever been there will know that you've got the names of kind of scientists and engineers written around the base of the Eiffel Tower. And again, they actively made that decision to not put a woman's name up there, because why would you remember a woman, you know, for her contribution to mathematics. So it's quite important we tell those stories, because for a lot of people, not everyone, but for a lot of people, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And if they've never seen a female mathematician, if they've never seen a female scientist, if they've never seen a black woman engineer, then, you know, for some people, they don't want to necessarily be the first. You don't have to kind of want to feel like you're breaking a barrier, but it helps normalize it for everyone in a way that it's not just the girls and young women, but other people around them, whether it's parents, whether it's their brothers. You normalize the same way as journalists. We don't think male or female journalists, you think someone that writes, and, you know, of any gender. You know, we need the same thing for scientists, that everyone can feel empowered enough to be able to contribute and solve problems.
Absolutely. I saw the film Hidden Figures with my son, and I mean, we loved it. I mean, he still refers to it to this day. And it, you know, it's so important for us to sort of give voice and really promote the contributions of everyone in society.
And what's incredible about the whole Hidden Figures story, which I guess is why they call it Hidden Figures, is, you know, Catherine's still alive now, and a lot of that is still within living memory, and a lot of people will have remembered the first mission that, you know, she worked on, Man on the Moon and the rest of it. But up until now, that's been a story that she's lived with. She's been here. You know, why should she be dead before NASA names the building after and all that kind of thing? So it's still, for me, it was quite an emotional experience watching the film. And if you haven't, you have to go and watch it.
It's fantastic.
And it's out on DVD now. But it was insane to think that that story had been hidden. And it was only, what, 2016, I think, that she was then recognised. Mm-hmm. And now she's having her time. But it doesn't need to be like that. Why did it have to be something that was obscured? It's bad enough that it even happened. You know, a lot of the things that she went through, why is that something we don't talk about and we haven't up until now? And why is Hidden Figures the only movie we have to point
exactly.
to?
Exactly.
You know, yeah. if we wanted to ask about wars or Roman times or anything like that, we've got oodles and oodles of films. But again, it's this problem of just having that one portrayal mm-hmm. and not having several and mm-hmm. telling those stories.
Absolutely. And we're seeing more and more women take the helm in different cultural fields, particularly in publishing and in film and television. So let's hope that it can possibly start a trend.
We're hoping. Can only hope.
One thing I was thinking is one thing that was highlighted in Hidden Figures is the women that were sort of tucked away in a room who were called the human computers. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, there was one woman who came from the human computer group to go on to work on working on the
Seven.
On the mission. There was another woman that worked on the first, was it IBM computer? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it touched on several areas. But what I was wondering is now, in terms of the underrepresentation of women in particular tech and science, all the areas that we've mentioned, engineering and maths as well, do you think that now that we're getting to a point where these industries are highly lucrative, there's obviously a lot of employment opportunity. It's a pretty wise way to go in terms of people looking to develop careers, in terms of future jobs. Everyone's worried about the future of work. Mm-hmm. And tech, you know, taking our jobs. Yeah. Well, then you better get a job in tech, I say. But do you think, in terms of the money and the power dynamics, do you think that's had any influence on the fact, on the reason why now it's such a male-dominated industry?
So back in the 80s and kind of just around that time, there are arguments to say that yes, you know, because, you know, initially when we were talking about punch cards, and as you saw in the film, it was a woman's job to do, right? Mm-hmm. So it was something that women were doing, mm-hmm. if you go back, you know, enough time. And so it's when money and it became more lucrative that kind of men then came and, you know, they say kind of elbowed their way in to kind of drive prices up and go for kind of something that then ended up being higher status. Mm-hmm. So there is something around that. But I think that's why, I try not to talk about the money too much. I mean, it's something that's there, something we talk about. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, if you go into it for the money, you won't stay there, you won't enjoy it. You know, it's exciting and it's cool. And you'll stay there because of that rather than because of how much you're being paid. That mm-hmm. being said, it is a really well-paid space to be in. Mm. But I think, you know, in terms of things like power and influence, that's the other side of it. I think if you have that, you know, we call it the fourth literacy now. It's digital literacy. It's reading, writing, arithmetic, and redigital, I like to kind of say. but, you know, having that literacy does mean that you will have that power, you will have that understanding, and you'll have leverage in the next world that's coming, because, you know, the bots are going to do some of our roles. They won't do all of them, I guess, in our living, in the time that we're all alive, but they will be performing more and more roles. And if you understand that technology, if you understand what's going on behind it, then it means that you're less likely to be, you know, held at the mercy of your Wi-Fi fridge or your driverless car. Mm-hmm. So you don't, you know, you can be a better consumer and maybe even a creator to make sure that you create algorithms that aren't biased against people of color or women. Mm-hmm. Which again, you know, in the history, when we look at things like the seatbelt or even Google Images and kind of different algorithms we have now for photo recognition, you know, the awful things that are coming out there, you'll be part of that process to create things that are fairer.
Yeah.
And are better for society and have a more holistic view. I think if you look at a lot of these tech companies now, they have a lot of kind of the same type of person building tech to solve the same kind of problems that same kind of person has. And there's a huge opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've definitely noticed a difference to when I started out in online media, almost 20 years ago. And it was very, I think in terms of the media, it was a more diverse space. But obviously I've worked closely with people in tech my whole career. But I have noticed a shift as we've moved towards this sort of laptop culture. A lot of people, there's a lot of startups, a lot of independent projects are happening. I mean, that's fantastic, that entrepreneurial spirit. But I have noticed that as things have been sort of, I guess, sort of moved away from sort of that public sector style in terms of workplaces and employment, there isn't necessarily the same sort of conscious equalities practices when it comes to the hiring of people. So I've noticed that in the tech space, I'm shocked at how homogenous a space, and how it's just a sort of one or two types of people in a space. You know, people just hire their friends. They're not sort of going through those old, you know, I guess old school practices of ensuring that they're not discriminating on different grounds.
There are two sides to this, I think. So, you know, the industry is losing out by not doing that, and they're finally cottoning on to that.
Okay.
And so we're seeing a lot more initiatives like the Tech Talent Charter, which Matt Hancock launched last week, that's looking at those practices for recruitment, retention and promotion in tech companies in particular, with companies signing up to make sure that they follow things like the Rooney Rule, from which we've kind of borrowed from the NFL, where whenever you're hiring for any position, you make sure you have at least one person of colour or one woman that's part of that recruitment round. You don't have to hire them, but you can't close the round unless you've considered a couple of them. But what the nice thing that I find about technology is that it's quite democratic. So, and the barriers of entry have come down a lot more than they were, you know, how high they were 20 years ago, which means that a lot of these things you can learn either, you know, of organisations that are kind of the adult version of what we do at Stemets, or online on your own. And the access to that information and the access to the space to practice, you know, you don't need to have access to a computer lab anymore to be able to play with some of this software. A lot of it is online. A lot of people have free access in libraries or in Starbucks or, you know, wherever it might be, or any other major coffee chain, I guess, to be impartial. But, you know, you've got a lot of opportunities now where the barrier has crashed down so low, and so, you know, you're able to refine yourself, you're able to do well, and if those companies aren't hiring you, you are able to strike up and to some extent, you know, build your own thing and tap into that entrepreneurial spirit or support someone else who has it,
right? Yeah,
the number of emails I get every week, hey Emery, do you know someone that could build this, that and the other for me, could build it, you know. So, you know, if you've got those skills, there are people out there with the ideas who will take you because you've got that skill, and they're not tapped into that whole kind of old boys network, old way of, you know, Bob retired last week, so we need to hire another Bob. And if you don't look like Bob, we can't take you on because you can't possibly know what Bob did. You know, there's an example. We work with so many different companies. There's an example of one that we were talking to a couple of months ago who were complaining to us that, you know, they had this Bob, right? So there's someone that leads this construction project who's about to retire, and he's been trying to hire his replacement for 4 years. And you've got to think, you know, that's fine. You can sit there and wait, and he can wait 4 years or more until he retires or something else happens, and you'll lose that contract because clearly there's no one good enough, right?
To replace.
But there is. And if you as a company can't clock that soon enough, then that's to your detriment, right? You'll go the way of Kodak or Blockbuster or whoever it is, waiting for your Bob to come along.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not sustainable, but they're cottoning on now.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And that's why it's so wonderful to see what you're doing. And particularly that you're working with such a young demographic, because, you know, that's where my optimism lies. When I see, you know, all these, like, these YouTubers, I mean, you know, they're barely out of primary school and they are becoming their own sort of one man everything in terms of, you know, they're figuring out all the sort of video stuff, the photography stuff, the editing stuff. You know, they are really, they have a high technical aptitude. So I think you sort of tapping into that age group and that demographic is brilliant. So we're going to go to a short break, and then when we come back, we'll be speaking more about yourself as a female entrepreneur and role model in that sense, and also a bit about your background as well. You're locked into the Arts and Culture Show. I'm Karina H. Maynard, joined by Anne-Marie Imafidon, MBA. MBE, even.
Colorful.
DJ Karina.
Colorful Radio.
For all my life, I would not deny, like brothers in my mind. He, treasure of his heart, there upon his arm, eyes of midnight stars. I've been tempted by forbidden love before, but why must she be everything that I've been praying for?
Oh, fine, yeah. It's gonna be fine, yeah. Now you're gonna be mine, yeah. I think I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm. I've been watching you from over in the corner. The way you move and the way you groove, oh yes, it makes me wonder. You move so freely and you shake it so riot. The dress you're wearing makes you look out of sight, yeah. I think I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm. It's time to make my move before the night is over. She seems to be the hottest thing in town, so I must take her over. The way she's bubbling, she'll get you in the mood. Tonight, let me take you on a mirror things tonight, yeah. I think I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm. I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm, girl. I can't resist your charm, yeah. Oh, oh, girl, now. Oh, yeah. Yes, I've been watching you from over in the corner. The way you move and the way you groove, oh yes, it makes me wonder. You move so freely and you shaking it right. The dress you're wearing makes you look out of sight, yeah. I think I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm. It's time to make my move before the night is over. The hottest girl in town. Now I must take her over. The way she's bubbling, she'll get you in the mood. Tonight, let me take you on a mirror things tonight, yeah. I think I'm gonna swallow my pride and ask you for a dance. Yes, it's tearing me up inside. I can't resist your charm. I'm gonna swallow my...
You're locked into the Arts and Culture Show. I'm Karina H. Maynard, and I'm joined by this week's special guest, Anne-Marie Imafadon, MBE. Now, Anne-Marie, we were speaking quite a bit about the importance of diversity in STEM, as in everything. And I just wanted to speak a bit about yourself as a female entrepreneur and role model. And, you know, how do you think that's impacted the work that you do or framed the work that you do?
Being an entrepreneur?
An entrepreneur and a female entrepreneur.
I don't know. I mean, so I've never not been either. It is a tough question to answer. I don't know. I think, maybe the only space, I think off the top of my head, sorry, the biggest place that I see it is that as a team, so the Stemetz team as a social enterprise, we're quite a diverse team.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the guy in the team, we have different women from different places, who mm-hmm. have arts backgrounds, who have science backgrounds, varying ages and all the rest of it. And so I find that where even though we work simply for girls and young women, and gender is the main point of us as an organisation.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about things like intersectionality, which comes up quite a lot when you talk about women and feminism and those kinds of places,
mm-hmm.
I find that for us, we almost kind of have that box ticked.
Unlocked,
but more
yeah.
than that, we kind of live quite intersectionally
right.
as the way we do what we do. So, you know, often it's a bad thing and a good thing, but often we'll see articles or different things about STEM and girls and young women in STEM, and it'll be our images from our bank of, you know, photos from 5 years of Stemetz events.
Wonderful.
because we have diverse young women working together on a computer or building something or creating.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find that intersectionality is built into everything we do because we as a team are like that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's the same thing of diversity and perspectives. We're able to bring that to everything we do. And so we don't have to go out and say, Black young women, welcome, or Filipino young women, mm-hmm. welcome, or blonde young women, welcome.
It's so obvious.
You know, yeah, it's a thing brilliant. Where actually girls see our feeds
mm-hmm.
and they identify with, if not one, but or more than one of us, and so come along and feel comfortable in that environment.
Yeah.
And so we're able to run these spaces in a way that has quite a lot of impact because people do feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
to be themselves, to ask questions, to say, I want to build a period app, or say, I want to build something for my natural hair, or whatever it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel comfortable enough to come there and say that and bring that to the tech that they're building.
Mm. Yeah, I did pick up on that when I've seen footage of your Stemet hackathons.
Mm.
And it, you know, it's young girls and your team that is so diverse.
Mm.
And yeah, it stood out to me because it's rare. And I mean, I think that's the way it should be. I mean, if you're just picking the best, then the best is going to look like everybody.
Exactly.
And representation is so important. Visual representation is so important in terms of, like you say, girls looking at your feed and seeing themselves represented, and not just seeing themselves represented in terms of ethnicity, but even in terms of the way that the girls are dressed.
For dogs. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them look like, yeah, you know, some 12-year-old girl with her beanie. Yeah, I'm going to be a hacker.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some are more prim. And I think that's fantastic. Fantastic. You know, and tell us a bit about your upbringing, because we've spoken a lot about cultures in workplaces and a bit about cultures in education in terms of male dominated societies, but how does someone like you come to be, and what was your upbringing like around education?
I'm the eldest of five.
Mm-hmm.
And it's four girls and one boy. So it was quite interesting at home that there was nothing that the boys did, because for a lot of the time, for almost 11 years, there were no boys to kind of compare it against. For me, our environment at home was one where it was, whatever you're going to do, do it well.
Right.
Like, whatever you're going to do, excel in whatever you're doing. We don't really mind, although, you know, my parents are still upset that I'm not a doctor and all the rest of it, although now I am, but hey, or not a medical doctor. But, you know, it was that kind of environment where it was go and try whatever it is and go and do well at it and give it your best.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, nothing is impossible. So my dad is the kind of person that, you know, believes that there's a genius in everyone. It's a, you know, thing that he talks about quite a lot, and it's, you know, anything is possible. Don't have anyone else say that you can't do something or it's impossible. Like, there's always a way to do something. There's always, if the first 10 people say no, then go and find the 11th that will say yes. So that was the space that we were brought up in.
Mm.
And so it meant that, you know, things like doing my GCSEs at 10 or A-levels at 11, all the rest of it, it was an enabling environment where I was like, okay, if that's what you're going to do well, let's do it. Let's go.
Brilliant.
Let's go. You know, after you've done your GCSE, what comes next? You do your A-level. Mm-hmm. After you've done it, well, what comes next? Go to university. So it's very, and even now it's still like, okay, cool. And then what's next? And what do we do? You know, how do mm-hmm. you level up what's going?
Mm.
And so that's the kind of environment that we were all brought up in, really. Also, being one of five, we're all quite competitive. And so anytime I'd do something, everyone else would want to do it. And so other people did stuff, I'd want to do it. So we're still like that now, today.
Mm, yeah, that's brilliant. So it sounds like it was sort of almost like high expectations and no pressure.
Almost, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, even now, it's quite funny. So the TV was always on in our house. But if you read stuff, people will just assume that it was very much like a very strict space to be in. And it's strange how they managed to do that, really, that balance of, we'll expect a lot from you. It was almost, maybe there's a bit of trust in it, I guess. We expect a lot from you. Mm. And we give you the space to get it done. Mm-hmm. And if the TV's on all the time in the background, and that's what helps, or kind of, you know, there was no certain number of hours for TV, your bedtime or anything like that. It was quite, you know.
Yeah, because you, I mean, obviously your family have had quite a bit of coverage, media coverage over the years. Mm. You know, Britain's brainiest family. Mm. And I think, you know, we're sort of, the whole sort of tiger mum kind of phenomenon is so well documented that maybe people assume, as you say, that you were in this strict environment.
Yeah, I wish they knew. Like at one point we had two TVs in the living room.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. I still don't know why, actually, thinking back, but yeah.
It's brilliant. And then you went on to Oxford. Yeah. What was that like?
Oxford was great. I think, you know, you hear so much in terms of horror stories, or people get this sense that Oxford's maybe not for them. Mm-hmm. And I remember my first night feeling like that a little bit, and being on the phone to my best mate at home, like, oh my goodness, it's going to be 4 years of just putting my head down and doing this work. And actually, I'd do it again. Like, those are some of the best years of my life. You know, with Henry Bonser, actually, we launched the Oxford Black Alumni Network a couple of weeks ago. And it was funny because he was interviewing me and we were talking about Oxford in front of all these people that had been to Oxford. And everyone has a different experience. So I can't take away from those that, you know, maybe didn't enjoy it as much. But, you know, it was the time of my life. We had so much fun cooking jollof rice, all the rest of it that we did, living in Nando's, actually, coincidentally. But there was so much fun. There's so much to learn. So many opportunities that have come out of that. But it was something that, again, if there's this thing of kind of doing the best and wanting to go for the best, if that's the best for your subject, mm-hmm. or the best for where you think you're going to end up being in, mm-hmm. go for it. Go and apply for Oxford. Like, they've got the kitchens. I think they've got the hairdresser now there as well. You know, you have the ACS, you have groups that are interested in things other than even just being based on race. Mm-hmm. But it's quite an enabling environment. And, you know, looking back now, there's so many things about that experience that add up to, that kind of make it what it is, but are good. So things like, you know, you'd sit in lectures and there'd be hundreds of people in that lecture, but when you have your tutorials or supervisions, as they are at Cambridge, it's just you, maybe one or two other people, and your academic, which means that you get that face time that a lot of people wouldn't get. But then it also means that you're less likely, and again, you know, everyone's experience is different, but you're less likely to feel like the only black person in the room if there are only four of you. Because mm-hmm. you're probably also the only person that, you know, has this as their specialism, or the only person from London in that room, or whatever it would be. Mm-hmm. And so you're able to kind of drop a lot of any kind of external barriers or things that you might be facing, and you are sat with an academic who's chosen for you to be at that institution.
Right.
And so it means that the whole setup, the whole dynamic is so different, but also so positive. Mm-hmm. And for me as well, you know, with what I do now, I didn't even realize until I had that moment in my career, looking back, that I was one of three girls in this course of 70.
Yeah.
But while we were there, it wasn't like, oh gosh, me, Clarina, and Clarice the whole time. We were just part of the group. We were mm-hmm. folks on this course.
Yeah.
And so I loved it, and I'd do it again. I'd recommend it to anybody that has the grades to apply or has the ambitions to apply, mm-hmm. just to apply. Like, the worst they can say is no. But if you've got to be in it to win it, really, with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's really inspiring for people to hear. Particularly, I have heard you say before that you hadn't realised that you were the only, you were just one of three in a room of like 80 plus. And I think that's great, because at the end of the day, that's the attitude that we have to have. Not that we want to be, in inverted commas, the first woman or the first black person or the first whatever group you belong to, the first sort of working class white guy from up north, to be, you know, to be doing something or the only person in the room. But I think it's really important to have that attitude that, you know, you're there to benefit and make the most of it, really. And, you know, I guess any issues can be other people's issues and not your own.
I say that all the time. I mean, it comes up all the time speaking at these conferences and people ask, you know, have you ever been discriminated against because of this, that and the other? And it's like, it literally has got nothing to do with, you know, you asked me earlier, you know, as a black female, you know, I've never not been that. And so if that's something you want to use to hold against me, it says a lot more about you than it does about me. It's no reflection on what I'm actually doing, the quality of what I'm doing. And so, you do have to kind of externalize as much as you can, and not everyone can, but as much as you can, you do have to externalize it because it does have nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And for anything that you have, any part of your identity you have, that's a bonus point in the right scenario. And so your work is to go and find the place that you will not be tolerated but celebrated.
Absolutely.
Because that place exists. There are people looking for you to come and be in their team. There are people looking for exactly your, you know, your perspective, your background, your experience. And if this person is going to discriminate you because of it, you're definitely in the wrong place.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anne-Marie, I could speak with you for so much longer. Oh my gosh, this is so interesting. Got so much I'd love to cover with you. We'll have to have you back again. For you listening in, you can head over to colourfulradio.com to check out our profile on Anne-Marie and everything that she does. Anne-Marie, tell people where they can find out more about STEMADS, and you know, if people know of young girls that want to sign up for one of your events, how do they go about that?
So any Google is your friend on this kind of search for STEMADS. We are stemets.org. It's one M and then the E and the two T's, like cigarette, I guess. We're on social media, so on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, the whole shebang. We have a mobile app, so if you have any young women that are interested in either being inspired or just looking at what options they have, if you search for STEMADS or O to the B in the app stores, both of them, then we have a free app as well to download. They can win prizes and all that kind of stuff. And as I said at the beginning, everything is free, it's fun, and there's always food. So you definitely send them along to come.
Incredible. Anne-Marie, thank you so much for joining us. Incredible work, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you very much.